In 49 other states, football is just a game. But this is Wisconsin.
The Green Bay Packers have won the Super Bowl. The Lombardi Trophy is coming home.
Wisconsin fans demand the best. The best analysis, the best interviews, the best coverage, and no one delivers like the Bill Michaels Huddle.
Good evening and welcome to Bill Michaels Huddle. We are on the air. We're broadcasting live at Pauly's Pub and Eatery here in West Dallas, right across the street, a stone's throw away from the Wisconsin State Fair Park. It harkens me back to warmer days and summertime. Kevin Holden from CBS 58 on hand. Christina Tuoso. It's Tuoso, right?
It's Tuoso. Tuoso, if you want to be fancy.
Yeah, well, there you go. I've never been fancy. There's nobody's ever going to accuse me of being that. Here today with us as well. So the controversy this week, obviously, Ty Montgomery. Obviously, ha-ha Clinton Dix. I'll start with you, Kevin. Is this team better off?
It may not be better off from a talent standpoint, but where it's better off is directionally. It's better off for what's going on down the line. And you know that you'll never hear in front of cameras from Brian Gutekunst or anybody else in Packers management that we had to clear out dissenters in the locker room. Mm-hmm. You're not going to hear that sort of thing. But it was clear, especially after what happened in L.A. on Sunday, that Ty Montgomery and ha-ha Clinton Dix were two guys that they looked at and said, if we're going to continue on the rest of this year and have the locker room united as one, it's probably time to make this happen. And especially in Ty's case, because that just, I mean, you talked to him Monday. You were really our first, live at least, voice into what was going on with him. And, I mean, he was very honest with you, which is great. It was nice to see that from Ty, but you could tell that's a deep situation. There were threats and all kinds of stuff involved. So if you start down that road with Montgomery, then Ha-Ha's next, and it's like, okay, he doesn't think he's going to be back. Maybe this is the time. So the answer is, from a talent standpoint, no. But I think the locker room you have left is in better shape for this year.
I think what we learned about the Packers is you don't go rogue. That might be the best way to describe it. You're not going to go out on your own. You're not going to talk about the team. You're not going to talk about your future. Go out, do your job, shut up. Unless, of course, you're the quarterback. Then you can throw little quiet daggers at people every now and then. But beyond that, Christina, do you think the message is being heard inside that locker room?
I think the message was heard back in March when we sent Demaryius Randle packing. I think that it's become very evident in the Brian Gutekunst era that this is how this team is run. If you want to run your mouth, if you want to be opinionated, if you want to be a little mouthy, then you're going to suffer the consequences, and the consequences of that are no longer being on this team. I don't have a problem with Ty Montgomery being gone. I think there's nothing wrong with having a tandem rather than a three-headed monster in the backfield. I think that Aaron Jones has proven himself to be the number one on this team. He can carry the load. Jamal Montgomery is a fresh pair of legs that can be added into the repertoire there, and it's going to be fine, in my opinion. I was actually thinking about this, though, on the way over. I have a question, because I don't know if I was the only one that felt this way listening to Ty Montgomery talk in his first availability after he talked on your show. He talked in the locker room. And I almost felt myself feeling bad for him when he said, you know, I put my body on the line. I sacrificed how much playing time I could get, how much money I could get. I didn't really know what my role was. I sacrificed my position. And I was like, am I weird for feeling a little bad for the guy?
I sat there with him, and I had a chance to get to know him a little while ago back in Super Bowl. We were in Phoenix about 3-4 years ago. And he was always a stand-up guy, very genuine guy. Kind of a quirky dude, but when he sat there and he talked to me about his family, he said, look, I don't even go home. We're both, my wife and I are from Texas. We don't go home. We love it here. I started to feel bad. What gave me a glimpse into him was when he said how much he really kind of got it worked out with McCarthy, and he felt good. And then he said something about, if I'm here. And now I should have listened at that point and thought, he's not going to be here.
Right.
He knows something.
Wow.
But I thought, well, you know, maybe he just feels like there, you know, until you go to practice on Wednesday, there's always that chance that, you know, anything can happen. But the whole time I'm sitting there thinking to myself, he doesn't have a role. He wasn't the best running back.
And
he wasn't the best
that.
Wide receiver. He's a good blocker, but not a great blocker. You know, he was your blitz package guy or third down guy because you knew they were coming after Aaron. So what did he have? And if they bring Trevor Davis back, he's not your returner. Yeah. So is there even a role for Ty Montgomery? I think they did him maybe a little bit of a disservice because they made him the running back behind Eddie Lacy. You know, and mm-hmm. they should have at that point in time said after the season, we'll go get a regular running back. Go ahead and go back and be a wide receiver and be the best you can be. But even that, they're going in a taller, bigger, stronger, faster distinction. So there isn't a role for him right now.
No, and watching that Rams game, there's almost a part of me that felt, were they trying to, did they have this hope that he would look like a Todd Gurley, you know, that could be a great running back, take a pass out of the backfield and be that kind of player. And it just never fully worked out for him. So I don't know. I got a soft spot in my heart for him. I kind of feel bad.
Here's the thing, though. This is not the only chapter for this in Montgomery's career. When he made that transition, when he was a wide receiver and then all of a sudden he was a running back, you remember that this was something that Mike McCarthy said something like 8 or 9 weeks after the fact. You remember that? We were pushing yeah. him every week. What is he? What is he? What is he? And he wouldn't answer it. And then way later, like months later, he said, oh, yeah, by the way, he's a running back. I don't know if we told you guys that or not, but he's a running back.
Minor detail.
And I wonder if
But he still carried the 88 number.
Right, which was really
bizarre.
Which was
really weird.
But so if I'm Ty Montgomery, maybe we didn't notice it then, but maybe that was the start of that simmering of that disappointment. It's like we aren't going to announce what your role is, even to the media. We're going to leave them thinking that you're a wide receiver when we technically consider you when you're in a room with the running backs,
right.
when you're doing things with the running backs. They, I think as a player, a competitive player, a guy that was a good player at Stanford who did a lot of good things in his career, that's probably a difficult thing to take. And for me, maybe looking back now, maybe that's the start of all of this.
I wonder, and he said this, I wonder if he doesn't fumble the football, if he's even – we're even talking about him this week.
No, not
a chance. If they trade him away. You know what I mean?
He seemed very aware of that on Monday. You know, if I didn't fumble that ball, if I didn't make that split-second decision, we're not having this conversation. I 100% believe that, yeah.
I wonder also about the tantrum on the sideline that was reported. Now, in Silver's piece, there was, quote, numerous – there was coaches and players, six people in all, that talked about this. He went through detail by detail as to what he did and how he explained it. So I don't know where the truth lies. I don't know if he's just saying, this is what I did. So if it was a tantrum, I didn't deem it as a tantrum. I just kind of let off some steam. Some people say, no, he was pissed at the coaches. He did this purposefully and spitefully. And he was, deeply hurt that anybody thought that he would put himself above the team for everything that he's done for the team. But I wonder at some point, do you just say, hey, I've done everything for the team. It's about time to do something for me. I don't know.
If I remember correctly, his response to the tantrum was, I was very frustrated on the sidelines. He didn't even talk about being taken out for a series
right.
earlier in the game. He said, I was very frustrated on the sidelines. I don't know what my role is, and I have limited opportunities. The limited opportunities does lead me to believe that maybe there is some turmoil within the coaching staff.
He said that he had been just – he went in for his series, and he said it's always been you go out for a full series. That's what the coach has always done. He said, I went in for a play, and then they pulled me back out. I didn't have a chance to make an impact.
Yeah.
So I came over – didn't throw my helmet, just set it down, screamed, like you would, you know, when you yell into a pillow because you have you don't have a pillow on the sideline to yell into. He said, and then I turned around, they called my number again, I had to go back out. So he said it was a play. So if it was a tantrum, then what was the problem? And which, again, he's right because he said numerous times to us, he didn't know what his role was. I said, they never sat you down and said, this is what you're going to do for us, this is the series of plays you're going to be in. He said, no, they always say, you know, be ready, grab your number. And that's true, you know, in case somebody calls your number, but you would figure if you're running the, quote, three-headed monster of a running back out there, you'd know what your role is. You know, they never said, hey, you're coming in on blocking downs or you're going to be this guy out of the backfield. Or, you know, he said, I never knew. They never talked to me about it.
So the other half of that then is you know that if they ran this in a game against the Rams, that they ran some version of it in practice, right? You know that they went late in games because they do this in practice all the time, not just practicing a play but a series of plays, which means that if this happened to Ty on the field in Los Angeles, it must not have happened to him in Green Bay when they practiced it.
Right.
They must have run it differently when they were doing this in Green Bay in practice than they did when they actually were playing the game. And that, if I'm Ty, I'm frustrated by that.
Yeah.
If in Green Bay in practice, you're letting me run 5-6 plays in a row.
Everywhere in Wisconsin, the Bill Michaels Sports Talk Network.
Welcome back to the program. It's the Bill Michaels Huddle. We are broadcasting live here at Pauly's Pub and Eatery. We are in West Allis, Wisconsin, right across the street from the Wisconsin State Fair Park on Greenfield. Come on by. Christina Tuso from CBS 58. Kevin Holton from CBS 58 here. You should be here as well. Talking Packers, talking Patriots, getting into that coming up here shortly. The week obviously started off differently for the Packers. Instead of talking about the confidence coming out of a hard-fought loss out in L.A., which against what many seem to think is the best team in the National Football League, it has been controversy that has swirled around 1265. But, again, can good things come of this? I believe so. Look, Tremont Williams, most likely, who played for Mike Pettine, played some safety in Cleveland, going to move over. You know some of the young guys are going to get their opportunities. Jaire Alexander certainly proved that he can cover just about anybody. In addition to that, you've already known what Kevin King can do as long as he's healthy. Josh Jackson's another big body that they can put into the safety position if they need to. It seems like they're going to be okay. Now what you hope for is no injuries, because you get three or four injuries back there, and now all of a sudden you're really, really depleted, Kevin.
You go back to Kentrell Bryce covering Julio Jones in the playoffs.
Never happened.
You get to that. And that's a recipe to lose for sure. But I think a lot of the decision in Haha's case to do this at the trade deadline had to do with how great Jaire Alexander was against the Rams. And I know this because today at work I was going through, we have these, Scott Grotzky, the other member of our sports department, archives these plays, and he does them in numerical order. So, you know, you look for 23,
right,
and there he is. And I'm like, I've got to put together a couple of plays or something that's going to air.
Endless plays.
And I've got nine of them to choose from. Like, yeah. Nine highlight reel plays where he breaks up a pass and makes some dramatic display of it. Like, he was at, I saw the game in person, and I thought he was everywhere. And that, watching it on the highlights, he was better even than I thought. And I think that has to do with part of why Haha can go, because if you have that at least at corner, it'll help you at safety.
Well, the other question is, how good do you think of a safety Tremont Williams is going to be?
So I do have some doubts. I think the fact that he did play safety in Cleveland under Mike Pettine's offense definitely is a good thing. But we've watched him get burned a couple of times. I think he's lost a step. I think that, you know, Tremont's great to have there because of his veteran leadership within those defensive backs, and I think that they love him for it. Is he going to be a staple, you know, safety for that? I don't think so. I think that, you know, maybe you see how Josh Jones finds his way and kind of navigates that. But in terms of,
he needs to come back, doesn't he?
Right.
They need him big, because he was, yeah, at least a hitter that they desired.
Yeah.
But he's not exactly, it's not a Mensa meeting when he's in the back of that secondary right now. At least he didn't look like that he was going to be a guy that figured it out anytime soon. So maybe you just let him, you say, this is your zone, stay in your zone, that's all you got to cover, and just leave it at that. Because if you start matching him one-on-one or making reads or coming off of edges and stuff, unless you just say, go get the quarterback, I don't know if I trust him right now.
It's interesting.
With the communication.
And here's the other half of it, too. If you go to the team website and you call up depth chart, next to safety, the first safety position is a blank. Spot. I mean, they literally haven't even decided who goes in there
Well,
yet.
Let's be honest. I mean, a lot of times they'll run dime anyway.
Yeah.
So you can pull a defensive back in and say, hey, we're going to go into this direction. The only time it's going to really be a hindrance, who's going to cover Gronkowski? Because he could all of a sudden have a big
train.
Yeah, I mean, if he's going to go against Tremont Williams, I just toss him the ball like I'm shooting hoops and let him go up and get it all day long, and all Tremont's going to do is be like a Lilliputian trying to bring down Gulliver everywhere he goes. It ain't going to happen.
So, but this is what I was wondering. You know, when you take a guy who is, granted, I do not think that Haha Clinton-Dix was consistent in any way this season, and I think that we saw him give up on a number of plays throughout the last 2 years. But was it smart to get rid of two players on your team that were contributors in whatever capacity and not get players in return for them up front to help with this current season? Like, was that a dumb move? I don't know.
Yeah, boy.
Because now you got, we're enough, left wondering you, who's playing.
Well, here's the thing. You got enough depth at running back. Now it's defined. Now Aaron Jones is the guy. Jamal Williams is your chip-blocking north-south, plunge it through back. So we now know that. Your secondary, how bad off is it if you don't get a rash of injuries? If you get rid of a guy who played part of the time.
Yeah.
And we saw him take a horrible angle on tackling. Just got whiffed out in L.A., and we saw that far too often this year. Now, the thing about Haha, he would miss two or three plays and then come up with a pick.
Right, exactly.
You know, so
the team an interception.
Yeah, so he all of a sudden came up with a pick, and everything was supposed to be right with the world. And it wasn't a bend but don't break, because Haha just missed. And if he didn't have guys behind him watching his back, these are all going to the house anyway. So, and that's what a safety's supposed to do. So then you throw on top of it maybe didn't have the best of attitudes in a locker room to say, well, who cares? I'm not going to be here next year anyway. I think that's when you say, look, we're probably going to get a fourth-round pick for him anyway. We might as well go ahead and get it now and let him go because we got other guys that really want to play. Maybe Josh Jones is who's mouthed off and wants some playing time and wants to be on the field.
Right.
Maybe it's put up or shut up time. Maybe if you just get – it's kind of like coming to work with somebody who just doesn't want to be there or is always – you know, I call it the PBF, the permanent bitch face, who just is always angry every day. You know, you got that person that just every time you walk in, you just – every day is just a pain in the butt to get through the day.
The PBF.
Maybe now you get rid of the PBF and everybody's just really happy in the back end of that thing.
Well, and there are two things about HaHa that really kind of – I don't know. They're big question marks in my mind, but fascinating things to me. Here's one. If you ever look at rankings, if you ever look at statistical rankings of people at his position, and the national media will say this as they tweet, well, he's one of the best at his position in the NFL. But is he? He might statistically overall be one of the best at his position in the NFL, but how many times did we see video of someone via Twitter, somebody that covers the Packers and would break down film.
Gave up.
And show how he was allergic to contact. Exactly.
Literally.
The other thing is, what a difference of opinion, and you saw this when they made the trade, what a difference of opinion between how the national media and the national fans
right.
look at HaHa
local.
Versus the local. And you know, if that ever happens, I always go with the local because the local sees more of him,
yeah.
not just the stats.
Well, it's like Pro Football Focus said he's the third
top
best
third
best safety in the league. And all I kept thinking is, what the hell are you watching?
Right?
Is it just because of the picks? Do you get so many points for picks? It's kind of like a PPR league, you know?
And then look at the tackles in comparison.
Exactly. Like. It never made sense to me how they rated that, you know? But maybe because he was one of the better cover safeties out there or had enough instinct, maybe that vaulted him to the top. I never understood quite how they did it because I always thought to myself, he's just – who's watching this tape? And the worst part about it is Pro Football Focus is owned by Chris Collinsworth.
Really?
Did you know that?
No, I didn't.
Oh, I thought you knew that.
No.
Okay. That's what I said, and you both looked at me like I just shot
Take
your dog. You know,
it's
like, huh?
Oh, I'm sorry,
you
know,
what? No, Chris Collinsworth owns that.
Really?
He's got his people that work for that, and they all sit down and watch
and
all this film.
And they say HaHa Clinton
and they say
is
the he's the third best safety
well,
in the
league. Well, on film, the Redskins bought it, so.
Yeah. Well, you know.
I think they got to look at their metric. When the year's over, they got to look at how they view that.
So moving on and moving forward into this, we know what the defense is going to look like. Defense in a lot of areas, yardage-wise, top 12. Points per game, it's not where they want to be. They're sitting at about 17 right now in the league. They're still in the upper half, so to speak, but right around there. But it's still the scoring defense. I think the number's a little misleading because they've been put in some really bad situations, mm-hmm. specifically that Detroit game where they gave up short fields because of fumbles. So do you think the defense is better this year than what it was?
I do.
From last year with Dom Capers kind of calling plays?
I do. And part of it is it's, what you know, 8 weeks in under Pettine. So it's the beginning of an era. It's not like with Capers last year. Capers had been there forever, right? So players knew him. They knew the scheme. They knew what was going on. There's still an adjustment period going on here. And if they're performing at a similar level or a little bit better, that's actually quite a bit better in my mind because I think the players make the adjustments as you go along. I'll say this too. We're here talking about what we're talking about because of the series of events that happened. A loss to the Rams, a fumble by Ty Montgomery, the issues with the threats and then the trades and all that stuff. If you get outside that little bubble, the Packers played better than the Rams for a significant chunk of a game in the Rams' house.
For two and a half to almost three quarters they did.
Yep.
That's if you had doubts, and I had my doubts about this team, I felt like that did a lot to make me feel better about the games that are ahead. If they can play at that level against most of their opposition from here on, they're going to win a lot of games.
Right. Hold that thought, because I want to come back to that. And that was going to be my next topic. Well, we'll lead into that. We'll take an early break and come back and hash that out. We are broadcasting live at Paulie's Pub and Eatery here in West Dallas. We'll talk some offensive side of the football and whether or not you should be a believer that this team is better when we come back. More of the Bill Michaels Huddle brought to you by Bud Light coming up right after this.
Wisconsin-wide, the Bill Michaels Sports Talk Network.
Welcome back to the program. It's Bill Michaels Huddle. We love conversations off the air here. Stay tuned. There's more to come to that story, by the way. Hang in there. I'm Bill Michaels, Christina Tuso from CBS 58, alongside Kevin Holton from CBS 58, talking Packers, talking Patriots. So, Kevin, you alluded to it prior to the break, and I wanted to kind of expound upon this. So I thought that was their best game. And looking at the numbers for the defense is playing much better. They've gotten better each and every week. They've had a couple of hiccups, but anytime you pitch a shutout, you play really well against the Rams, you start to show signs with your young personnel. Things are starting to trend in the right direction. The one area of concern that I have is consistently this team offensively can't put the ball in the end zone.
Yeah.
They're stalling a lot of drives. You get inside the 35. I think at one point they were like 4 of 17 for getting points. And now this goes back to Detroit because obviously they had missed more than a few field goals in Detroit. But nevertheless, they were stalling consistently inside the 35 of most opponents. That number has really not gone up much. So is it alarming at this point that the offense is leaving the defense hanging?
A little bit in my mind, just because.
Because like, they have weapons. It's not like they're diverse of weapons or, you know, they don't have anything in their stable. They do. They've got some good young talent.
Well, and you know the first criticism is normally when we talk about offense and performance is predictability. And I'm not usually in that camp. And then I watched what happened on the 1 yard line right before halftime of a game where the defense had been playing its best half of football, in my mind, without question of the year. And the momentum of that got completely flipped around because they ran it at the 6-inch line and, mm-hmm. and got, you know, there's a safety and then the Rams get it back. And the next 15 minutes of game action, the Rams scored 23 points. And it was this flip, right, of momentum. But that's, again, going back to the offense, going back to, you know, are they able to keep up here with the defense? At that point, at the point of the safety, it was 10 to nothing.
Mm-hmm.
It should have been 24 to nothing. And that's why, to your point, that's what the thing is, that the safety should not have been such a big momentum swing because they should have had more points at that point. They
right.
should have put the ball in the end zone.
So what changes here for the offense? I think that last week we learned – last week to me was kind of a look inside. This is the future of the Packers, right? We had these young guys, these rookies step up and make big, big plays. And, yeah, I did feel like the offense kind of left the defense out to dry in that game. And maybe moving forward, we see just more from these. We have a couple of rookie receivers that made some big plays. We had, Valdes-Scantling that was able to make some big plays. We had, you know, you have the supporting cast now. It's a little bit longer, younger, that needs some room to develop, some room to grow. But maybe we get them more involved and see how that kind of changes things moving forward. Jimmy Graham, like, has he not been a flop?
He between the knee and the fact that he, now, I don't know for sure, but he doesn't run the crispest of routes, I guess.
Right.
But it's kind of a fly in the face of what we heard going back to training camp when they had a great relationship and he was catching passes and we saw some glimpses of it in the preseason. That one drive where they went straight down the field, got into the 20, went right to Jimmy Graham, touchdown. I said, okay, this is a glimpse of what's yet to come. And it's been few and far between. They don't go to him. The couple of times, I mean, they've gone to him to where he's had a couple of misses. They target him 3 or 4 times a game. But he hasn't been the impact player inside the 20 that we thought he would be. And I don't know, I mean, how bad is that knee injury for him not even to be looked at? You know what I mean? Going back to what you said, Kevin, now I pulled this up. For those at home, you can't see this. I pulled this up. But I don't know, and nobody, I mean, I've talked about it. People seem I'm being overly critical, but this is a run-pass option. On that run play.
Right.
Marquez Valdes-Scantling lined up on the outside. He's got a man 5 yards off of him. Aaron Rodgers looking down the line at him.
Mm-hmm.
Chooses to hand the ball off in this particular case. The guy, the defender moves up, but then immediately when the ball is snapped, Aaron doesn't even look in his direction. He's wide open to the 4 or 5 yard line
yeah.
with 5 yard cushion. Never looks at him.
Wow.
Never looks at him in a run-pass option.
That's the first time I've seen it.
So my question is, for as much as we want to heap criticism upon personnel and Mike McCarthy, and we knew they were going to stack the box in that particular case, don't we have to start at least honestly looking a few times at the quarterback who has ran the ball and not felt pressure and fumbled? He's had some really bad throws, almost into the ground, and then at other times he just hasn't looked at receivers. We've seen guys 9 yards downfield for a first down. He doesn't even look at him. He'll look at him and just kind of look him up and go, eh, and then tries the deep pass as well. How much of this do we look at Aaron Rodgers and say, we understand it, you're trying to be Superman. You don't have to be Superman all the time. Just take what the defense gives you.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
And it's not just a knee. Like, you know, it was the knee for the first several weeks. You could say, well, you know, he's hobbling around or whatever.
Right, right, right.
I don't think that's the case anymore.
No.
I don't think
not if we're talking about him getting out of a brace.
Right. Decision decision-making and that knee are two completely different things.
His decision-making has been what has elevated him above everybody else. He's smarter than almost anybody in that room.
I feel like we're committing a sin by the fact we're pointing fingers at Aaron Rodgers. Are we allowed to do that?
I understand that. I understand. And you know what? I'm going to have 50 people that are going to rip me on Twitter tonight saying you're bashing the quarterback. I'm not bashing the quarterback. I'm simply asking, we expect him to be Superman. The bar has been set so high. This guy can flip off the lights and be in bed before it's dark. We understand that. But that's what that's the bar he set.
Yeah.
We can't go backwards and say, well, just be like everybody else, because you're not paid to be like everybody else.
Yep.
You're paid to recognize what we just saw. So how much of this do we look at Aaron Rodgers and say, dude, you got to play better as well, because bringing a team back like against the Bears is fantastic, but you also aided in putting them in the hole early on. Now, he got hurt, so I can't completely point that at him. But when you're talking about like Detroit, where the drives kept stalling, you're talking about in L.A., where they went right down the field, scored, and after that, they didn't sniff the end zone.
Right.
Part of that's got to be on the quarterback as well.
I would definitely agree with that.
Am I going to like be the only one shot over here?
You're going to drag us down with slamming Aaron Rodgers. No, but it goes back to what I said. I mean, you just showed us the play there. I mean, Valdes-Scantling had a
He was wide open.
That defender was.
And at least, even if you hit him on a quick out and he doesn't get the 5-yard cushion, he's 3-4 yards
There's
out.
There's got to be a reason for that, though. Like, Aaron Rodgers is far too seasoned, knows how to read defenses.
The anger conspiracy people will say he's pissed off at Mike McCarthy, and he's just going to say, I'll run the play you want me to run, and I'm just a quarterback.
How many times
has he said, I'm just a quarterback this week?
I'm not paid to.
This sounds like the end of the era when Brett Favre and Mike Sherman were going at it.
So you think that it stems from the relationship that the two of them have, where it's almost like you're going to stick it to him?
I don't want
to
believe that. Because that to me is so high school and so petty. When you're talking about a franchise, a multi-million-dollar, billion-dollar franchise, that seems to me like it's so self-serving, especially in the waning years of your career when you need Super Bowls to validate to those around you, you know, so to speak. Maybe not to yourself, but to others. That would be like completely beyond. I can't imagine that. So for those that believe that, I personally think they're wrong. I think this is just something else that's going on here. I don't know what, but there's something else going on. But I can't put my finger on it.
The desire to win would be so much bigger in my mind, especially for a guy like Rodgers, because when they asked him about Brady yesterday, when you were up there, Christina, they asked him about Brady. All they wanted to talk about was Brady has this many Super Bowls and this many MVPs, and he's won this many games, and he's like he speaks in an admirable sort of way, admiringly of Brady, but you know, of his wins, of the things that he's won. So clearly.
Like it's all about the hardware.
Right, and that is, I think, the most important thing to Rodgers. That's why I have a hard time buying all the way into that he would.
Correct. Yeah. I could never buy into that, because if I thought for a minute that Aaron Rodgers was doing things just to spite the head coach, I first of all, I would absolutely crush him if I even believed that.
Yeah.
And secondly, I couldn't imagine that there would be anything. For a guy that's that competitive, I can't imagine that would be your giving in that particular way.
Is that just the safe route to run the ball there? I don't know. I know that he really struggled during training camp about trusting these young receivers to make plays, right? So
why do you got a young running back and why do you have a young receiver on the field?
True that.
You know what I mean? Why do you have that young package on the field of rookies if you don't trust them?
Right. Yeah.
You know, it's mind-boggling to me. So anyway, I just think that where this team is at, going back to your original comment, Kevin, of do you feel better coming out of L.A., I feel a ton better. But what they have to do on Sunday night, they can't settle for field goals. They got to punch it in, because we know you can't do that against Brady. Brady will eat you up. And now that you really don't have a matchup with Gronkowski, you have got to be able to score, because now Gronk isn't having the season he's had in past, because his numbers are down this year. But this will be the game that he has a breakout game, because they really don't have anybody else to cover him now.
Right.
You have got to be able to go ahead and punch this ball in.
There's nobody within half a foot of him
Correct.
In terms of height. I mean, he'll just reach over. It'll be basketball. He'll just be pulling rebounds down. Put Jimmy Graham on him. Put him on
That's
defense.
Right.
And put those two head-to-head. But it's very much like L.A., the Packers are going to have to win a track meet. And I thought, I thought that the Rams game was going to be a bit of a track meet. I thought we were looking at 38-36 kind of stuff. I did predict 31-30, but I was trying to be nice about
it.
I kind of thought it would go above that. And I think it could do that here, too, in that it's Brady and his weapons and Rodgers. And I still think he's got a nice set of weapons to go into New England. And coming off this game in L.A., I think, as like we said, there are points where this team looked good enough that they can take that with them and play well at New England and then turn around and play well against the Dolphins and then, you know, Seattle and then Minnesota. Like, that's – if you're talking about taking something from it that you can use for the rest of the games, I think they got that. I do, too.
And here's the thing. I think that there was a momentum shift after leaving in L.A., and it's all about what you do now with that. To me – first of all, the Patriots are a beatable team this season. They're not untouchable. That's number one. Second of all, this, in my mind, the way that it's set up is almost a must-win game for the Packers. Like, this is the one that speaks volumes. This is the one that really counts, winning your first game on the road. And having that momentum in L.A., I think, can only help for a game like this. For the Pats, this is, I hate to say, a throwaway game, but I just don't think that they're looking at it as it's not as dire as it is for the Packers.
I agree that this is a must-win. I agree that maybe it's a different reason because, to me, you can't lose to both L.A. and both the Patriots and say that you're one of the best teams in the league.
And make a playoff run,
yeah,
right.
You have to be an elite team. If you're going to be considered an elite team, not only outside but inside your own locker room, you got to beat those that are better than you.
Win against the elite teams.
First and foremost. I agree that they must win on the road because if you look at the rest of the schedule, even if you win the rest of your games at home, you're still 7-0-1. Mm-hmm. And that means you have to claim three more games on the road to even be able to sniff the postseason because we all know 9 games is not going to get you there.
Right.
10 games will pretty much solidify you there. And then you got to worry about tiebreakers because you're losing within your own division, and you can't all of a sudden just discount what the Bears are doing. Suddenly they're – because they got Buffalo on the docket. That should be a win for them. There's some games coming up for teams like the Vikings and like the Bears, and I can't believe I'm mentioning the Bears, but damn it, they're playing pretty good. And Mitch Trubisky – is getting it on with Mitch Nagy. They got something, some symbiotic relationship where Nagy says, hey, everything John Fox told you, screw that, go do this. And he's playing better,
yes.
You know? So, you know, between the Bears and you've got so much of a same level with teams in the NFC, there's nobody running away with things. I just look at it and think, they got to win this, they got to win on the road. An AFC game doesn't nearly mean as much, but the game you needed was in L.A. and you let it slip through. You get beat now. You're not telling the rest of the world you're elite. You're telling the rest of the world you're only fighting for your division. You're going to be a one and out all over again. That's why I think this is important.
3-4-1 if they lose, which means if you hiccup against Seattle or Miami, then you're 4-5-1. If you hiccup both, you're 3-6-1. Then you're in real trouble.
You go into Chicago and lose.
Yeah.
You have Detroit come here and beat you. You lose again to the Minnesota Vikings. Your season's done.
Yeah, you're losing record.
You're talking about a head coach being fired. A complete reclamation when we're talking about – now, I believe there's talent there, but you're talking about Nick Perry, which if they wanted to pay him to go away, they could, but I think more so after next season. Most likely, Clay Matthews is gone. Randall Cobb is gone. You start looking at all these different changes for starters. Aaron Rodgers is sitting there going, what the hell? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's a different scenario if you win and you win this year and you get to the postseason and you play well. But if you don't do it and all of a sudden they're firing everybody, you're learning new systems, new coordinators. Are we talking about new defensive coordinators and such all over again? I mean, they're bringing in new people.
That's a rebuild's going to take a long time.
That's what I'm saying. So the last years of Aaron Rodgers' career are going to be wasted on a rebuild? You know, I can't – that's why this game, I think, has a larger –
I never thought of it that way.
Yeah, I mean, this game has a so much larger connotation, I think, than what people are giving it for.
I wouldn't call it a crisis, but it's sort of a crossroads.
Right.
Yeah. And the crossroads began for me in 2013. 13, 14, 15, now with HaHa gone. Those three drafts have netted you almost nothing.
Three players. Now Jake Ryan is on the IR, so he's not contributing. You have three contributing players left from 13, 14, and 15.
And compare that
That's it.
To the Packers team that won the Super Bowl and how we used to talk about 95% of that roster had only played for the Green Bay Packers. They were draft picks.
You had an up-and-coming Sam Shields, Tremont Williams, Nick Collins. You drafted A.J. Hawk, and he had his best year ever. You were talking about an offensive line that finally started to come together. I mean, there were so many things. And then you brought in the Defensive Player of the Year in Charles Woodson. You picked up a couple of guys along the way, but that was really your big find. And you had you went through six linebackers this year, all of which whom you drafted. Mm. That year, all of them went down, but all of which you drafted.
And so that group that was the core of the Packers, which was draft and develop, is the thing we talked about for years. The cupboard went dry in 13, and the price is being paid right now. Right now, it's the crater of where that price being paid.
You know, it's funny when you think about this that we have all of a sudden taken this four quarters in New England, and this is the turning point for the Packers franchise. If we don't win in New England, instead of sending Rodgers out riding into the sunset, we have absolutely trashed the end of his career. So that's where it all starts.
Well, I think it's a turning point for the season, which then becomes a turning point for the seasons to come.
Yeah.
Because you really have to look at where you're at. And like I said, what are you going to do with Clay? Randall Cobb. You've got guys that are going to be coming off your books. Yeah, you're going to have money to spend. You can go out and afford a big, talented guy. Maybe get yourself the pass rusher you've been coveting. Unfortunately, the best guy that was out there is now playing for the Chicago Bears. So now you have to look at it and say, okay, what are we doing? And you know, you're not getting anything from Montrevious Adams. You've got other guys that have been drafted. They're just kind of guys, you know. Mm-hmm. You've already cut Vince Beagle. Montrevious Adams was supposed to be the 1-2 punch, and then Kevin King was going to be the guy. Thank God Kevin King panned out. He can at least make you forget a little bit about T.J. Watt and what he's doing in Pittsburgh.
But his availability.
But, you know, you can't make the club from the tub. You know, that's the old adage because he's always banged up. So there's so many things that have to go right for this team not to go into nosedive territory, I guess is the best. And they're never going to admit they're rebuilding. But if you have more guys leave, you don't replenish them, and you just say we're going to garner draft picks and such, you're rebuilding.
Back-to-back seven-win seasons, players going away via trade with
the healthiest you've been in 6 years.
Welcome to the rebuild.
The healthiest this team has been in 6 years.
Right.
And they're now sitting at 3-3-1.
I mean, I'm not trying to say they're going to win seven games, but I'm saying this what you're talking about here, a loss to New England and a couple of losses in the weeks that follow could lead to 7-8.
However, there's a bright side to this. I'll tell you what that is when we come back. Because it's not all gloom and doom and it all doesn't suck.
The sun will shine again.
Yeah, well, it'll shine somewhere. It all doesn't suck. We'll tell you why coming back right after this in the Bill Michaels Huddle.
You're listening to the Bill Michaels Sports Talk Network.
Welcome back to the program, the Bill Michaels Huddle. We are live out here at Pauly's Pub and Eatery. We're in Greenfield, Highway 1, or I should say on Greenfield. Just, real far east of Highway 100, I almost said. Highway 100, no, we're across the street from Wisconsin State Fair Park. Come on by and say hello. Christina Tuso from CBS 58, along with Kevin Holden here as well. We are brought to you by our friends at Bud Light. A lot of prizes to give away if you want to come into Pauly's tonight as well and have something good to eat, whether it's the mushroom and Swiss burger like I had or the pizzas or whatever it is you want. Great place. A lot of bands that they have in here now. So if you want to come in here on a weekend and catch up on some musical acts, feel free to do so. Going back to the positive side now, because we've talked about the negative side and the crux that this franchise could be set in. I think of it this way. If they win this game coming up, and I know we only got about 2 minutes here, but if they win this game on Sunday night, there's validation from the game on Sunday in which, one, they played about as well as they played in years against a very tough opponent on the West Coast in the L.A. Rams. They then come and beat the perennial power of the AFC. They beat them in their house, which is very, very hard to do. Mm-hmm. You get the swag of beating Belichick and Brady. You come back, and everything you thought about yourself is now, again, validated. You have a team in Miami coming into Lambeau Field in colder weather situation, which you would assume it's November. It's going to be colder. You get a win there. Suddenly you start rolling. Seattle's not Seattle anymore.
That's right.
You got a legitimate shot of beating them again, but you got to go to the West Coast, but doing it in front of the 12th man. You roll off three in a row. Suddenly your world is a lot different. You go in now as a true contender to take on the Vikings. If you could pull that off, now it's KD barred the door because, again, Aaron Rodgers is back. The Packers are back. Gutekunst moves are real. The young crop of talent is coming of age. Pettin is the real deal, and now everything begins to flow. And now it's just the opposite. You're looking to accentuate your team.
And as bad as November is schedule-wise, December, if they have momentum, could be a cakewalk.
Yeah, it's this Arizona, is a team in their schedule right,
right?
Now.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, if you get through this, Arizona, terrible. Atlanta, definitely not what they were. The Bears on the road would be a tough one. The Jets, I don't think, are that tough, and the Lions aren't that tough. They could, with momentum going in, they could go 5-0 in December without too much trouble.
So if they get a three wins here to go to 6-3-1 and then get the other five, 4-5,
yeah,
you're talking about a drastically different season. You can end up with an 11-win season.
And they're lucky because the division is – that's a tight race.
Right.
Yeah.
So you get to an 11-win season, suddenly you're talking about a whole different thing. You win your division, you've got a home game in the postseason, depending on what happens. You may end up with a home game anyway, and then all of a sudden the outlook. That's what I'm saying. There's a huge crux to this game as to what it is this team will or will not do in the path that they take.
So you believe, like me, that New England is the turning point of all.
Like, I really do.
This is,
I really do.
I do, too. That's why I said
funny,
it's a must-win game.
Last night I do pieces for the network. There's little vignettes of a minute. And I said, this is all about a path. What path are they going to go down? The path to kind of blowing things up and changing the way they do things, or the path to actually being on the road to a legitimate Super Bowl type of title. I mean, maybe this team, as Mike McCarthy's teams do, they get better as they go along. And come November, December, that's when they're usually at their best. And then we'll wait and see what January brings after that.
That's a man. It's a wide spectrum.
Yeah,
isn't it? That's
yeah, it is.
Soup to nuts.
We literally
yes,
blew up the Packers.
What'd
franchise
you call me? Before this.
It's. I mean, it literally is anywhere on that spectrum. And usually, when you're halfway through a Packers season in the Mike McCarthy, Aaron Rodgers era, halfway through a season, you're thinking, "Oh, they're a 10-win team. They're an 11-win team. They're a 12-win team." They could be anything.
Yeah.
And this is, and the New England is the exact halfway point. There's half a season to go.
You went out. You're 12-3-1.
Man.
And my prediction of 12 wins plus or minus one suddenly becomes true, and I look like Nostra Freakin' Domus.
Within the last 5 minutes, we blew up the Packers franchise, rebuilt it, and now they are Super Bowl contenders.
And
it's a wonderful thing
so
what can happen here on this
show. Sunshine up your sphincter. It isn't funny. We got another hour of this yet to go. Stay tuned. A lot more coming up right after this.
Michael's Sports Talk Network.